Eastern Palliative Care is a not-for-profit service which offers a full range of support programs with the aim of improving the quality of life of individuals and the families of those suffering life-limiting or terminal illnesses. It's the Eastern Palliative Care Show, and today I'm talking with Eastern Palliative Care volunteer Carol. So how are you going, Carol?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, you're a biographer for EPC, but also an ambassador.
Yeah, that's right. I work across a number of things. My love is to be a biographer. I love that.
But I also walk with the
palliative pause, so I dog walk as well.
Oh, really?
Which is a really fun gig. So you go and pick up someone's spoiled perch and walk in the morning. It's great. So I do that. And as well as that, I do the ambassador program. So I go around and speak to people, hopefully bringing EPC to the wider community to let them know that we're out there to help.
Excellent. Well, before we get into those roles, I just want to sort of introduce the listeners to who Carol is. Now, I haven't met you. I don't remember, but from our conversation earlier, you have been an English teacher.
That's right.
Yeah, and were you a teacher for a long time?
I came to teaching quite late in life. I was what they call a mature age student.
Yeah.
And so I came to teaching when I was 45, in fact, and taught for 20 years as a high school English teacher, and just loved it. Fabulous job. Loved it. Loved every bit of it.
Yeah, dealing with teenagers wasn't a big stress factor.
No, well, I was lucky. I taught at Springvale Secondary College, which has a high ethnic content, high Asian content.
Yeah.
And the students were divine. I still keep in touch with many of them, and just lovely. Really keen to learn, really keen to get good marks, and English was compulsory, so they had to do my subject. And so I kind of had a captive audience.
Yep.
But fabulous, loved it, and best job I ever had, and I've had lots.
I suppose you probably came across students like me who are a bit thick. I mean, I went through my whole school system and I still didn't know the difference between a noun and a verb.
I think we call those students ones that didn't really want to be there.
That'd be right.
Yes, and I was teaching at the time when they made it compulsory for students to go through and do year 12,
yep.
And it was nuts. And our school had a technical component, but they removed that to make it more academic, which, of course, doesn't suit everybody.
No.
But because I was at this highly Asian school, I was considered myself very lucky. And we all did that were there at the time. The school no longer exists. It's amalgamated now.
Yeah.
It's now part of Peterborough College. But lovely. Loved the kids. It was super.
So you were a teacher for 20 years.
20 years.
Yep. We know about your volunteer work that we'll talk about soon. But what else should we know about Carol? What sort of things do you do for your own sort of self-interest, you know? Any hobbies or anything? Do you do skydiving or...?
I have skydived, actually.
Really?
I know, which amused my students no end and amused my family no end. But yes, I did go skydiving with my daughter once, who booked me in and then said, well, if you want to chicken out, that's fine. You can chicken out, but don't tell me you can't afford it. Just tell me you're going to chicken out. Well, with a challenge like that, I wasn't going to. And yes, I did a skydive, so that was awesome.
One of those things where you have to get it right the first time.
Well, that's exactly right, you know. My kids at school, my students at school, saying, "Oh, who were you strapped onto?" And I'm like, "I wasn't. It was a static line jump. I jumped on my own."
Wow.
So I was pretty proud of that. And but basically, my hobbies apart from that are fairly mundane. I like patchwork. My husband and I go bike riding, but
yep.
we do cheat a bit because we've got e-bikes, so we get a bit of assistance on that.
Oh, I could talk about e-bikes for a while, but I won't.
Hobbies fantastic.
Oh, they are good, yeah.
Oh, the best thing ever. So yeah, so we do that a lot because lockdown, of course, has been quite different. I'm very much into family history.
Right, yep.
Which is part of what made biography it made biography, you know, attractive to me.
Yeah.
Because I had to retire from teaching quite suddenly. I don't know if you know about history or not, but my husband became sick quite quickly.
Mm.
Not the husband I've got now, my first husband.
Yeah.
He came sick quite quickly, had a cardiac arrest, in fact, and was sick for a long time, so I had to leave teaching. And that was how I got into palliative care, into palliative care volunteering.
I've heard that from a number of volunteers. They went through their own sort of situation with a dying relative or spouse, mm. and then moved into volunteering with EPC after that.
Well, I actually did mine while my husband, as I say, had a cardiac arrest in bed beside me at night. We were both really healthy,
yep.
getting ready to retire, do the whole grain nomad thing, all the rest of it, and quite suddenly he became ill, and he ended up in care for about 10 years after that.
Yeah.
I was pretty much a mess at the time and looking for something to do. And about the time my friend, Pauline, was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and she'd been having some chemo, and someone told her about this biography program, and she rang me that night and said, "I've got just the job for you." And I thought, I'm crying all over the place because
yep.
I've got this husband. And she says, "Would you like to go and work with some dying clients?" I'm like, no.
What planet are you on?
That's exactly right. And she was a nurse, so I think she thought, you know, this. But she didn't know I liked biography and family history. And so she also said, Alan would like it as her husband. And so Crystal Wallace, who's our volunteer services consultant,
yep.
was on the radio that weekend talking about the biography program. So it was like it was meant to be.
Yeah.
So I took them at Norman Hospital very ill, but I went in and saw them and thought they'd tell me to go away and get my act together, get my license in order, which wasn't going to happen anytime soon. But they took a risk and took me on, and it's the best thing I've ever done. It's the most life-affirming thing yeah. I have ever done. It's amazing.
That sounds really good.
People I work with are fabulous.
This is Yarra Valley FM 99.1, and I'm talking with Carol from Eastern Palliative Care, one of the volunteers there. And Carol volunteers, I thought, in one role and then two, but she has three roles. And one of them is the dog walking, and we have talked about palliative paws or something it's called with
That's
another
right.
volunteer. But yeah, how do you go with dogs? Are you an animal lover? Is that why you got into it?
Yes, I'm definitely an animal lover, love dogs, and many of our clients, you know, have these dogs that are, you know, with them all the time, and they become sick, so the dog becomes their companion.
Yep.
And they get quite stressed because as they're having treatment and their health's becoming less stable, the one thing that's really upsetting for both them and the dog, particularly if it's something like a border collie or Labrador or something, they can't walk the dog.
Yeah.
So a couple I've done, we go twice a week, call in, pick up the dog and walk the dog for half, three quarters of an hour, whatever you feel like, and then bring it back. And it settles the dog, but also the client is really happy that their dog is happy.
Yeah.
One of my clients said to me, and she died quite shortly after this, but she said, they really want me in hospital, but she said, I can't go to hospital, I've got to stay home for my dog, he needs me.
Yeah.
And I think that was all that kept her going, was that she had to be home for this most beautiful Labrador, just beautiful. So yeah, so that's a good thing to do, and you feel really good, and you've had your daily exercise. So
yes.
It's all good, win-win.
I know different dog breeds sort of have different traits, and we've got a golden retriever, and he loves things have to be regulated. He gets very habituated to things, you know. There's things happen at certain times. So I suppose if a dog knows he's going to be walked a couple of times a week, then that's he ends up being happy with that.
Well, you only have to go once or twice to a client's home, and then when you turn up the next time, the dog is actually sitting at the door,
yeah,
kind of all, you know, sort of almost foaming at the mouth, waiting for you to come. The last dogs I walked were actually two chocolate brown Labradors.
Yeah.
they thought, oh, you know, walking two Labradors could be a bit of an issue. But they were used to being walked together. They loved it.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And somebody stopped to talk to me. It was beautiful.
Yes, I suppose too, when the neighbours see, oh, who's this person? We know those dogs. Who's this person? They would also want to find out.
Sometimes that happens, yeah. Or sometimes if I go see the dogs that give them a treat and I find I've got somebody else's dog sitting beside me waiting for a treat as well. Because they were just beautiful.
We'll talk about the biographer role. We've had a couple of biographers on already, but each client, I suppose, is a different experience and would require a different sort of handling and everything. So how long does it take you to get to know the client to understand just what they want out of a biography?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because sometimes, mostly, they've mostly been quite straightforward, most of mine, although I did have one client that simply wanted to document what had happened to her in her cancer journey.
Yeah.
And so that took me a little while to get around, so I wasn't quite ready for what it was. And she just wanted everything documented, not so much a life story. But yeah, they're amazing. They're just so different. And everyone teaches me something new, teaches me something different.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's to, one lady said to me, I made some comment about my age and was sort of being a bit coy about how old I was. And she said to me, if they were my numbers, I'd shout them from the ceiling. Don't ever be ashamed of your numbers.
Yeah.
And since then, like, if somebody asks me how old I am, I'm like, yep, okay, I'm 75, that's no problem. And although it's become a bit more of a problem since I'm married again and my husband's younger, so I have to kind of think about that. I'm like, okay, no, she said I had to be proud of my numbers. Okay, let's go with that.
Yeah, because you are who you are. You're not just your age.
That's exactly right, yeah. So all those sorts of things. Yeah, and I had a man who I'd go to see, and every time I'd go, he'd say, now, how are you now? Would you like some tea, dear? And it didn't seem to matter if it was 9 o'clock in the morning or 4 in the afternoon. No, lunch. Would you like lunch, was what he used to say to me.
Okay.
I thought this was really strange. But then he'd come off the land, so he was used to his wife or someone taking him down lunch, whether it was morning tea or afternoon tea. They always called it lunch.
Yeah.
So he was always offering to get me stuff. And he thought I was really young, but he was 20 years older than me, so I guess that doesn't count.
The different clients you have, do you find there's a big difference in the amount of time you have to work with them to draw their story out?
Yeah, they'll usually say, my first client said to me, I don't really know where to start. Mm. And it was my first client. I didn't know where to start either. And I said, oh, you know, what do you remember about your mum? And that was really the only question I had to ask her, because she was a natural storyteller.
Yeah.
She just rattled off her story. It was beautiful. And so she was really easy. I did have one gentleman who whatever I asked him, he said, yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was fine. Yeah, I like that. And I'm like, you can't write a biography on, yes, that was, you know, that was. And so we've got a list of questions we can ask that are all a bit quirky and they're called quirky questions.
Yeah.
And so I ask him the top question, which I thought was quite mad. My coordinator gave me these questions. And the first question was, have you ever had a broken bone in your body?
All right.
I'm like, what sort of silly question is that? Like, I can't ask him that. But anyway, I was desperate, so I asked him. And straight on, he said, oh, yes, there was the time that my sister, and away he went. Once he kind of got something to hook onto, but I would never have thought about that because I'd never had a broken bone. I thought it was a silly question.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're all just different. Had a gentleman that had danced as a dancer, had worked overseas and told me the most amazing things about meeting royalty and all those things. And I did have to sort of fossick around in an old suitcase of bits and pieces that he had there to find this out, find old programs from ballets that he'd been into. So you've kind of got to do a bit of detective work or look around the house and see what photos you can see or, you know, what mementos they've got, those sorts of things, and get to find out about them.
Do you find that the clients like to sort of clean up the story of their lives, or do they treat you like a priest in a confessional and tell you everything?
No, they absolutely treat me like a priest in the confessional. Sometimes it's a bit confronting. they just rattle on and they kind of get into storyteller mode, and sometimes I'll kind of look and go, oh, okay. And sometimes we do have to go back the next week and say, look, this is going to be printed off,
yep,
and this is going to be available for your family. Is this what you want to say?
Yeah.
Is this how you want this to appear? And sometimes I'll think about it and go, oh, look, maybe we could take that bit out, or maybe we could, you know,
yeah,
modify this a little bit. But basically, they just go for it. Once they get into it, they're really quite... Yeah, quite into telling you just whatever's going. And yeah, I learnt so much. I worked with a gentleman who'd been in China during the purge of the landlords when the communists came in.
Wow.
And that was just mind-blowing. And he definitely wanted his story told. And I think his family took the story in the end and added to it.
Yeah.
But I went to him, for, you know, I went a long time for him. Yeah, it went on a bit long, but... we needed to get it done.
When they're telling you the story, do you have them on their own, or other family members sit in as well?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, sometimes, well, our preferred official stance, I guess, is that on their own. But with this gentleman, I needed somebody sitting with him. His English was excellent, but because the names were Asian names,
yep,
I couldn't tell if they were male or female, and he had trouble with his pronouns. So he mixed up he and she.
Yeah.
So I needed his wife there to tell me, you know, which way it was, or to spell names and things for me.
Yes.
And sometimes if they're older, if the couple are there, sometimes one will remember bits and pieces. You know, sometimes these couples have been married like 60 years.
Yeah.
And so that helps if they're there, but mostly on their own, or sometimes with their dog sitting on my feet, which is not supposed to happen, but sometimes it just does.
This is the Eastern Palliative Care Show, and I'm talking with volunteer Carol, who's been chatting to us about her biographer role. Carol, I've just found out you don't work alone. You're a bit of a Batman and Robin team with your husband.
That's about right. Well, just to sort of clean up the picture a bit, my husband that became very ill when I started doing it died 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And my friend Pauline, who got me into this, also died a few years ago. And we've all been close friends. The four of us have been close friends.
Yeah.
Since then, Alan, Pauline's husband, and I have been married. And we've married a bit over 12 months ago. Palliative care like to think that they organised it, but not so. Because since Alan's wife died, he's also become a biographer. You're not allowed, or they don't like to take you in until you're 12 months post-bereavement.
Yeah.
But as soon as Alan's wife had been dead a year, he joined the program as well. So he's a biographer. And he's done several biographies himself, and so have I. But since we've been married, we now tend to do them together, or we've done the last three together, which is wonderful because he can transcribe up the notes because he's a better typist than I am.
Yeah.
And then I can go back and proofread it, so I get quite the good side of it.
Yeah. Do you visit the clients together, or does he stay at home and get your notes?
Normally, I started off visiting. I start off visiting doing them on my own, or he starts off doing them on their own, and then at some stage we'll introduce the second person.
Yeah.
So we won't block in as a double dating pair right from the beginning. When I was doing my ballet dancer gentleman, I started it off, and then Alan came in with me, and he took photos off the wall and helped me snoop through suitcases and assemble things and all the rest of it, and scanning and stuff at home. So, because what we do is we interview the clients for about an hour, 3/4 of an hour to an hour, roughly once a week.
Yeah.
And at that stage, we were able to go into people's homes. And so we do that, then we come home and we get photos and anything we can scrounge to make the biography better. And then we transcribe it up, and then we take the notes back next week, or we email them to the client so they can check if the spelling's right or if it's what they want to say.
Yep.
And then we add a little bit more, and then we add a little bit more. And then eventually we reorganize it and insert photos, and we make a booklet of that client's life. And at the end of the process, we give the client a printed copy. We're giving them two printed copies and as well as it on a memory stick.
Yeah.
And it then becomes the client's total control over, it's their property. We destroy all copies, clean our computers, get rid of everything, all the voice files, everything. Yeah. And then it's theirs to do with as they wish. They can print off more or they can add to it, whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
So the good part is that if we're proofread, normally I would proofread it all when I'm finished it, and then I'd send it off to another volunteer and they would proofread it to make sure that it was right, and then we would get it printed. But because Alan and I do it together, we just pass it across the table.
Yeah.
So it works really well, and we can bounce ideas off each other. So, yeah, it's great.
Of course, working together under normal circumstances would be fine, but with these lockdowns and everything, how have you handled? I mean, we've been locked down for, you know, like 9 months or something.
Yeah, look, it's been really difficult. I haven't had as many. Normally, we would each do maybe, we average out to about 2 a year, because
yeah.
they're very time-consuming, not just the going and backwards and forwards bit, but the client often goes to hospital or bits and pieces, or it just takes a long time, so they're quite time-consuming. So we do a couple a year each. So that's probably cut down a bit. We've done one this year, and we're on our second one now. And because of COVID, we're not allowed into the client's house anymore. We used to be able to do contactless delivery of notes and things, but we can't anymore. We have to do it all via the phone. Or if your client is computer literate, we can do it via Zoom or FaceTime or something like that. But neither of the two clients we've had have been really up for that. So I ring them on my mobile phone, I put it onto speaker, and then I put my tape recorder beside it. Alan and I sit one either side of the table, and we kind of have just like a little round table conversation, which we record.
Yeah.
When that's finished, then we being Alan, types it up, and then we go back and sort of try and clean it up a bit, and then we hopefully, this particular client's got email, they tell me they have, so hopefully they will, or we email it to a relative or something, and they'll take it round, and then they'll proofread it for mistakes and whatever, and hopefully they can send us some photos via telephone, you know, send pics on your phone or email or something like that, so we can include those.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it works.
I understand that Alan's in another room listening to radio.
And, he tells me he is, so I should say nice things about him, should I?
No, I'm just wondering if you've locked the door so he doesn't come in and interrupt you.
I've locked the door so the dogs don't come in and interrupt me is actually what's happened.
You're quite happy doing the biographer role. You don't see any sort of end to that?
No, I don't. I was quite unprepared for it. When I did the first biography and I went to deliver it and I was all excited and I delivered it and I thought, oh, that's really good, you know. Then I walked out the door and said goodbye, and then I thought, oh, I'll never see that client again. I kind of got a bit attached, and it was like my Thursday afternoon was with this particular client. It was like Thursday afternoons with Grace. Oh, I don't have Thursday afternoons with Grace anymore. So it's a bit of a wrench breaking that contact, because once we've finished the biography, then we pull right out. We don't see that client anymore. And sometimes they get a bit attached. We get a bit attached too. So you kind of want to ring up and say, how are you going? You know, what are you doing? And so we pass that off usually to another volunteer, and somebody will come in and do home visits and talk to them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So no, I don't see, you know, I'd like to be able to keep doing them. It's something I really love doing. We get so much out of it. Sometimes we cry. Mm. I also cry a lot. But mostly we just laugh at all the funny things they've done and the funny holidays they've done, or sometimes the clients play jokes on us and that sort of stuff. So, it's fun.
This is Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the Eastern Palliative Care Show. Talking with Carol, who's been talking about her multiple roles, first as dog walker and then as biographer with her husband. And Carol, you're also an ambassador for Eastern Palliative Care.
Yes, that's right.
Now, I've never met an ambassador for EPC or had one here on the show, so this is a new thing. You're the face and role model of EPC to the public, are you?
Well, yeah, it sounds a bit posh, doesn't it? I wear a lanyard around with a necklace that says Easter Village Youth Care Ambassador on it. Yes, I guess the idea is to be able to get our message out there to the community. And so basically we go into anywhere that will have us and for any size group that will have us.
Yeah.
Because what we want people to know is that we are out there. We do offer these services, and there are many services that we offer, and these services are free of charge. These services are not means tested, and you don't need to be referred by a doctor or anybody else. You just log onto the website, and there's a little thing that says, you know, register, apply, whatever, or ring up Eastern Palliative Care. And ask them, that's the message that we're trying to get out. So I go and speak to, I've spoken to as few as 5 people or as many as 60. Sometimes I get to go to dinner, I like going to dinner programs. I get to go to dinner programs like this Rotary or those organisations and talk to their members about basically what palliative care is. People often tend to think that if you're in palliative care, you're going to die like now, tomorrow, this week. And we're hoping to get the message out there that, yes, it is a life-limiting illness that you have, but it doesn't mean that your death is going to be imminent. Not necessarily. Sometimes our clients actually come off the program. They're stable for so long.
Yeah.
But the sooner you can access those services, hopefully the more comfortable you'll be. And as a biographer, it's really good because I can get you while you've still got plenty of time to talk to me and find photos and things.
Yeah.
What else do we try to do? And we try to let people know that I've been covering a huge number of, a huge area. So we want people to know, you know, how far our areas go. I mean, and they go, you know, from Yarra Valley right through. So, that you know, there's quite a lot of area that we cover. We go from our head offices in Mitcham.
Yeah.
And we go like to Boroondara, Manningham, Whitehorse, Monash, Maroondah, Knox, and the Yarra Ranges, of course.
Yes, pretty much anything east of Melbourne.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so we really want people out there in the community to know that we offer this support. We have a huge lot of paid workers there. We have like family support workers, nurses, doctors, massage therapists, music therapists, grief therapist, all those sorts of things. And we want people to know that they're there. Like I said, I'm involved in, and we have volunteers that are like hairdressers or smile makers that take photos or hug makers that make blankets and things like that.
Yeah.
All those sorts of things. We offer education in grief programs for the person who is the person, the bereaved person, for 13 months after the death of their partner or the death of the person they were caring for. They have all sorts of grief programs, education programs, walking programs, just sitting with people programs, those sorts of things that to deal with their grief, to help them deal with their grief. We have loads of volunteers.
You certainly, with EPC, cover a huge amount of situations. You don't just do one thing at EPC. They offer many different services.
And help people get, we can help people get equipment. We have nurses that are on, you know, on call that you can speak to at any time. And often that's a problem that people with a life-limiting illness have. It's being able to pick up the phone and say, hey, is this normal? Yep. Is there anything I can do to relieve this symptom? Or do I need this, or how do I get this? How do I get a hospital bed? How do I get oxygen? You know, what is available? How can I do that?
Yeah.
So that's why we want people to know the way. I mean, we have transport. We will take, well, this is pre-COVID, so we're just waiting for that all to get back. We can't do that at the moment. But we have people that do transport, that drive people to their chemo, sit with them while they have it if they need it.
Yeah.
Those sorts of things. We want the community to know that we're there and it's easy to access it.
You straight away put on your ambassador hat and you've been an ambassador for the last 10 minutes here on Yarra Valley FM for EPC, and maybe with the biggest audience you've had too. But I just want to get into your role now with this last question. as an ambassador, do you have to scout out groups to find, to talk to, or do they come to you?
No, they come to us. I don't scout them out. Somebody does scout them out. I don't, and I think we'll... I mean, if anybody out there wants someone from Eastern Palliative Care to come and speak to their group, or I've done speaking gigs on Zoom since COVID's been down. If anybody wants us, they just need to ring the office and say, can we have a speaker? And we're there.
Yeah.
Palliative care is a bit of a touchy subject with a lot of people. And so sometimes, it's hard to get into places because I think they think it's going to be really sad and we're going to, it's all going to be crying. And it isn't.
Yeah.
I've got some very funny stories I could tell you. So that's really what we're aiming to do. We just want people to know that we are there and that they can access us.
Yeah.
If anybody wants us, that all they need to do is get onto Eastern Palliative Care website or ring the office and say, hey. And as I say, I've just done a meeting on Zoom to a Rotary club.
Yeah. So for those listeners who do want to follow that up, the website is epc.asn.au, and the website is full of great information, not only for people who might want EPC to help, but if you actually are thinking of volunteering, there's a volunteer page which goes through the different types of volunteer roles that EPC have running, and you can find out what type of volunteering you might be able to hook into. So thank you very much for your time, Carol, and
the
fascinating stories. So again, Carol, thanks for your time.
And it's a pleasure, thank you.
This is Yarra Valley FM 99.1.